Yes.
Started. We will be, everyone will be muted during the meeting. We'll recognize you, when we see hands or when it's, when you appear on the agenda. So, Jeremy Kellish is here with me and he's going to be taking care of muting and unmuting. So at this time, I'd like to say welcome everyone to the May 5th, 2020 meeting, regular board meeting, the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. We are doing this remotely, as you all know. So first of all, on the agenda is our announcement of closed session items, and the board met in closed session and discussed a student personnel, stipulated expulsion, public employee performance evaluations, conferences with labor negotiators, and
hear this.
At this time, we will ask for consensus on the order of business, but I'm going to make a comment about, just bear with me. On our agenda, are you having trouble hearing me, Dr. Prater?
Yeah, just, it's a little muffled.
Okay. Is this better?
That's okay. Better.
Thank you. Thank you. With regard to today's agenda, agenda items 10.07 and 10.08 have been developed in anticipation of potential changes to administrator contracts. However, no changes to the contracts are needed. Therefore, we will not be discussing these agenda items under 10.07 and 10.08. So that will be a change, and if I bring them up mistakenly, I will rely on Ms. Rogers to let me know that we had decided we had made that statement. Next, item 5.03. Dr. Prater, are you still having trouble hearing me?
Yeah, it's a little muffled, Ellen.
Okay.
Might need to get closer to the mic. Okay. Try that.
Is this better?
Oh, I see what's going on. My apologies to everybody.
One moment. Oh,
there. How's this? Try that again.
Is this better?
Yes. A little bit.
Yeah, we didn't have this issue last time. Let me see what we can do here. I have this now right next to me.
Yeah, that's better.
I see Walt's hand up.
You know why. We'll sort it out.
There we go.
Okay. So other than that, otherwise we have consensus on the order of business. Thank you. Thank you. All right. So next item is 5.03, action on the stipulated student discipline agreement. If someone could make a motion, please. Mr. Millar, sorry. I'm looking down. I'm looking up. I'm doing the best I can.
Let me get unmuted. Sorry.
Okay. Here we go.
I would move the recommendation of student A.
Thank you. Mr. Munger? Okay. And we have a motion by Mr. Millar, a second by Mr. Unger. All right. So something that I did not do a good job on last time, but which is required under the Brown Act revisions with regard to distant meetings, is I must take a roll call vote on every vote we have. So here we go. I'm going to stay within the law this time. Mr. Millar.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Frey.
I'm sorry, Jeremy. That's fine. I'll work on it.
Okay. Would you do that again, Ms. Frank, please?
Yes.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Ms. Roger. Yes, she says.
Was that Rogers or Eisendrath Rogers?
That was Ms. Roger. And Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Yes.
Thank you. And I also vote yes. All right. A little cumbersome, but we're gonna get there. Okay, next we have approval of the minutes from April 14, 2020. Any changes, revisions? Hearing none, if someone, Mr. Buckman?
I was going to make the motion.
Please.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes of April 14th, 2020.
Thank you.
I'll second.
Thank you. All right. Mr. Buckman, you're taking the roll call vote.
Thank you. Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Ms. Roger? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Millar? Thank you. Next, the approval of the minutes from April 16, 2020. Any changes? A motion, please.
This meeting is being recorded.
A motion, please, with regard to the minutes of April 16th?
April 16th? Oh, I'll make a motion.
Thank you. Ms. Roger, would you care to second that? Thank you. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Thank you. Ms. Frey?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman? Yes. Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Roger?
Eisendrath Rogers, yes.
Yes.
Carolyn Roger, yes, she says yes, and I say yes. Thank you. All right, next, our student representative is the board, and we are
Yay.
To see you. Thank
yes.
you for taking the time and coming in today. So I'm waiting. We're going to bring you up here.
Do you have the codes of Riley?
Yes. Riley,
are
you going
to go? Hi. Yes. So things are very difficult for us the last time that we spoke. But so we've transitioned completely to online school, and it's sort of difficult for me to do things that like normal and run our events, but we've been doing the best that we can. And so I think, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, Jenna, was it last week?
Last week, yes.
Last week we did a spirit week on Instagram, and it was sort of just like, it was a quarantine themed spirit week. So it was like Quarantunes Tuesday. And so like, what music have you been listening to? And things like that. And people just submitted pictures to our Instagram, and then we reposted them. And we've just been sort of trying to make sure people remember that we are still here, and we still all are students at Morro Bay. And we're trying to keep everybody connected, because we all definitely feel super separate right now. And we also put together a slideshow for teacher appreciation, which also is currently happening. And we just used different pictures, and we made posters, and it's sort of just like a collage and the best that we can do from at home. And yeah, it's been difficult. Lots of homework, you know. Jenna.
And we, like Riley was saying, we're still doing Spirit Weeks at home. So we have this month is Mental Health Awareness Month. So we're doing our Mental Health Week, which is actually very fitting because we really want to focus on the students' mental health in quarantine because it's definitely something that everyone right now is struggling with. So we're planning that. And then we also are planning a lot of things to commemorate the seniors and just like honor them. So we have our seniors week coming up, which we're still putting together. And a lot of the ASB students are making signs for the seniors just so they know that we all care. And we're going to like do everything we can to make senior year special for everyone. And that's all for Morro Bay.
Thank you, Greg. Mr. Millar has a question.
Yeah.
I'm kind of, for both of you, I'm just sort of interested in your impressions as far as content, mastering, and delivery for online learning and your experience these past, what, month or so now?
Yeah. At Morro Bay, we're doing most of our stuff on Google Classroom, which we were using while we were in school. So it's very nice that we're not having to learn a whole new form. It's definitely like it's getting better. At the beginning, like the students and the teachers didn't really know what to do, but like it's more just assigning work than teaching as much as it would be if we were in school. Riley, you're muted. We can't hear you.
Okay, there you go.
Now I'm back. It's sort of like, it's harder just because the teachers can only just give us things and then we have to teach ourselves using the resources that the teachers give us. We can't really get like that direct contact. So it's harder to learn things, but we are getting by, and it seems like it's starting to work more now, like Jenna said, than it was in the beginning, and everyone's sort of figuring out. I feel like in the beginning, it was just so much, like the teachers didn't know, like how much to assign, and it ended up being just like a pile of work, like just more than I've like ever had, and now it's definitely calmed down from that. But that's pretty much the consensus when I talk to people about it. It's hard, but it's starting to work.
Gregory, how about you? What's your experience been like?
My experience online school, it's been pretty good. It's just mostly on Google Classroom and then everything. It's neat now, but it wasn't kind of neat at first, but it's pretty easy. It just says do today, do tomorrow, and then you just kind of do all your assignments. But it definitely is difficult when you're trying to understand something. You can't really get the teacher to really talk about it. So yeah, but It's working out
good. And whose birthday balloon is that behind your head?
Oh yeah, that's mine. It was a couple of days ago.
Birthday. Thank you, guys. I appreciate your inputs.
Yeah. So at Slow High, we've been doing the same thing. Kind of, we have been having an activity and spirit day each week. So the whole point of this is to just kind of increase just morale during this whole time. So we've had a trash can 3-point contest for an activity where students send in videos of them throwing socks in a hamper. And then we've also had a paper airplane contest and other things like that. And then we've also been doing spirit days each week just to try and have some fun with that. But moreover, this week is our staff appreciation week. So we're asking all of our students to send in a video of them just thanking their counselors and staff members for everything that they do for us. And also we're trying to work on an intramural activity, something that everyone can do at home that's different than the activity, kind of like a tournament style type of thing. But we're still kind of figuring that one out. And also on our athletics page, we're trying to do something for our athletes. So something will come out on our athletics page that will commemorate our athletes. But yeah, we're just trying to do everything that we can to kind of keep ASB running and keep the new ideas coming fresh.
Well, any other comments or questions from the board? So we want to really thank you for all you've done. I know this has been rough. We've missed you at the meetings and very much appreciate you taking the time to come today. I know that typically towards the end of the school year like this, we introduce us to next year's representatives and all that sort of thing, and that hasn't been able to occur, but I'll look forward to receiving hopefully information from you with who, if you could just send me an email as to who will be doing that, then I can reach out to them. Thank you. And you guys have been awesome. And I know this has been hard for all of you, and you've hung in there with us, and we very much appreciate it. So at this point, I'll make my usual little spiel that, as always, you are welcome to remain with us during the meeting. But if you have other thank you again for all you've done for us this year, and great best wishes and good luck next year. Thank you very much.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Okay, so I need to backtrack for one moment because I did not read an entire the entire piece I needed to do with regard to the superintendent's contracts and with how that works. So I needed to read another statement. I read this, I made the statement about removing that from the at those two agenda items. But to put a bow on it, I need to state that in closed session today, the board completed its evaluation of the superintendent, and additionally, the superintendent has completed his evaluation of our assistant superintendents. And we as a board are pleased to report that all of the evaluations were positive, and that the superintendent and both the assistant superintendents are therefore entitled to a one-year extension of their contracts from June 30th to 2023 to June 30th, 2024. In addition, all three contracts provide that upon receipt of their positive evaluations, each of the administrators receive a merit-based step increase of 2%. This 2% increase represents the approximate increase received by the district certificated staff for step advancement each year. Accordingly, on July 1, 2020, all three administrators shall receive a 2% step increase so long as they are not already on step 10. And just to state that the board and each of us remains very proud of our administrative team, and we thank them for their leadership, especially during this challenging time of the closures. So thank you.
All right. Thank you.
We will move on to many pieces of paper. Correspondence. Come with me, please. At the time that the agenda was posted, we had received an email from Sarah Shaffron, and that is the only correspondence the board had received at that time, that I'm aware of, that came to all of us. So at this time, item 7.02 is public comment, and this is when we will welcome public comment that having to do with items not otherwise listed on the agenda, unless you wish to make a comment about something that is on the agenda, but make it at this time. As you know, the board cannot engage in conversation with you or answer questions. There is a time limit of 3 minutes for each agenda or non-agenda item. And there is a public request form online. If anyone has submitted one, we will recognize it now. Mandy Dawson is in the background here somewhere, and she will be the keeper of the timer. And it's my understanding that at this time, we have one person wishing to address the board, and that is Lisa Washman. And Ms. Washman is now unmuted. And we can hear you.
Hi, all. I wanted to let you know what happened on April 25th at the FCCLA State Virtual Conference. We had to use our kids' competition scores from our spring meeting in February. And I am very proud to let you know at Slo High that we had a lot of our kids place that were competing. And so they had not been able to improve their competition to go to state. And so that just tells me that even though they were using their spring rubric to grade them, that they did very well throughout the state. So Jenna McFarland came in second in fashion construction. She's going on to be an engineer, which the two actually coincide. Sarah Kramer came in second in chapter and review portfolio. Both of those girls are going on to our virtual national competition in next month. Delaney Jones came in second child development. Emily Doy came in third in child development. And Talia Zundel came in second in the junior section of child development. And then I have Haley Choi and Zari Ramos came in fifth in interior design. On top of that, I received several awards, a Star Advisor Award, an Outstanding Advisor Gold Level, a Spirit of Advising Award, and I am being inducted into the 75th Anniversary Hall of Fame as an advisor. I am the only teacher in California that is being inducted. The other two people from California are James Oviatt, who's on the FCCLA State Board, and then our consultant up at the Department of Ed. So I was shocked and super excited. And although I can't go to Washington, D.C. and receive that this year, I will be going to Nashville next year to receive it in person. So that was the highlight for me. And so things are going well. FCCLA virtual is difficult, but we're doing it. And yes, going virtual for the teachers was difficult, but I think we got it.
Thank you.
That's all I've got. Thank you.
Congratulations. Thank you very much. Well done. Thank you. All right. Next is our 8.01, our business and budget update. Mr.
Yeah, Ryan Pinkerton here. Just a few kind of things to share with the board today. One is just, again, another kudos to all of our staff. Really been stepping up during this time with COVID and just cleaning and doing whatever it takes. Food service, feeding 13 to 15,000 families, right, or meals, I should say, a week. Just a lot of great things. So for the board also to know, we are doing pre-planning in terms of, I know Kim McGrath is going to come up with a plan for re-entry with school, those types of things. But we are kind of jumping forward with looking at hand washing stations and disinfectant and the sanitizer in classrooms and gloves and masks and whatever we're going to need to have in place come the fall. So I just want you to know that we are talking about it already, getting in front of this as we move forward. We have kind of tentatively completed staffing and enrollment up to this point, after the lotteries have been completed at our elementary sites in particular. So I'll be working with principals this week to kind of review those numbers, staff. We are seeing a decline in overall kindergarten numbers at this point in the year. So as always, you know, we continue to monitor this with our principals and sites over the next, you know, few months as we go into summer. And we'll add staff as necessary as we proceed, right? So we're definitely looking at that as we move forward. And then lastly, just for the board to know, there was a quick FEMA grant process. You know, right now with the state funds we've received, we're kind of covered with our expenditures thus far with COVID. But I went ahead and put that through with the, as Rob Lewin had said, would be a good thing for us to do. So we've kind of signed up for that grant process, and should we need those funds in the future, we'll be prepared. So I just wanted to let the board know that. And thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Next, we have our educational services update.
Mr. Graff. Great. Thank you. Lots of good things happening. I'm happy to share with you today. Just an update. I know that you've heard about so many Chromebooks and hotspots being checked out to families or even staff members in need. So currently we have about 2,600 Chromebooks checked out and around just under 600 hotspots checked out. So really glad that we've been able to get those supplied to people that need it. Also, just a quick update, as you know, the foundation, asked the community about supporting families in need through the Family Resource Center, and they've raised from our community over $70,000 in a really short time, and families have been working through our Family Resource Centers to get assistance when they're really, in that bind. And so just big shout out to our incredibly supportive community. And I think it speaks a lot to your work and the great schools we've created that people are so supportive of everything we're doing and of families that are needing it. As Ryan just mentioned, we have completed all three lotteries. So this year we, as you well know, had an additional lottery for Baywood. So we've completed the lotteries for Baywood, for Pacheco, and for Teach. All three schools and even all three grade levels at Teach do have waiting lists. So we've been able to allow, the first kind of tranche of students in. As Ryan mentioned, we have a lot less kindergartners enrolling right now. So it's a little hard to judge if that's a true number or if because of the situation we're in, we have enrollment packets kind of missing or are out there. So we are holding off on some of the spots just to provide a little bit of a cushion so that we can make sure that we are, especially for Baywood and Pacheco, getting in those first priority group enrollment group students in there. And then we'll open it up after that. So that went well. All of those, I think you already know, are always open to the public. So this year, in this unusual circumstance that we're in, we went ahead and just videoed that through Zoom and created a recording of it. And then principals post that and send that out on their newsletter since people couldn't come here in person, just for the sake of transparency. I'm going to go over kind of Governor Newsom's executive order in the LCAP update, but just a couple of quick things that are not related to that is things like PE minutes have been waived. The California data dashboard's likely suspended at this point. So I'll tell you a little bit more about some of his executive order items and how that impacts us in the LCAP. Just a reminder, May 4th, so yesterday teachers had additional and last planning day. So as you know, we've provided about one time every 3 to 4 weeks so that teachers could have that opportunity to plan and make sure that they were providing high quality virtual distance learning opportunities for students. So May 4th was the last one, took place yesterday. I know you've heard about also, we have Camp Care as well as the Y that have provided childcare opportunities for first responders. And so we do have people taking advantage of that. They kind of broadened it out past first responders at this last opportunity and said that also essential workers obviously people working in schools are part of that group. So we do have that childcare opportunity, and people are beginning to take advantage of that. And the reopening that was just mentioned, so I won't say too much more about that, but we are starting to gather input and work on what requirements we are required to do, and then coming up with how can we create a great reopening plan that's good for kids, kids that are going to need support, and that also work for our staff members. So we're beginning to work on that. More to come about that. Evelyn.
Just 1 second. And then Dr. Isaac. Okay, Evelyn, you're on.
Kim, just a quick, two quick questions. One, are we pretty much covered now for all families with hotspots, or are we still needing to order some more? That was my first question.
So we have everything we need. So if anyone needs one, and you know, as you hear from anyone, if anyone's needing it at all or has any issues, we have them available, and we also have our ISNT hotline. That if anyone has any issues, we're there ready to help them.
Perfect. And my second question is, for those families that are on any of the waiting lists, what would be, and I know you said, you know, the enrollment is low and we're holding spots open as appropriate for, you know, that first group or neighborhood groups or whatever that looks like. When will those, what's a potential date that families might know when that, you know, when they would get in or not get in?
Yeah, to come further off the waiting list is what you, it's that group that's on the waiting list. So
yes,
to start taking off the waiting list. We haven't determined the exact date, but it would likely be late July or maybe early August, just to make sure that we have, you know, finished the kind of EL information, make sure we have bilingual students in there for Baywood and Pacheco, as well as allowing some cushion for people that may move into the Baywood area or already living in the Baywood area and haven't turned their form in. And then we would start notifying. We haven't said the exact date yet, but most likely late July, maybe early August.
Okay. Thank you.
I have Dr. Isendrath Rogers, then Mr. Unger, then Ms. Whiteman.
Thank you. Kim, about the number of kinders, it seems to be an aberration, at least in my own experience, that we've always seemed to almost be overly full with kindergartners. And I wonder if this is a COVID anxiety, kind of keep the kids home longer, and if, and that may be the right thing to do, I'm not judging, but is there any information that you feel like we could put out there or reassurance we could offer or something? Do you have any inkling as to what the what might be causing the shortage of kindergarten?
Yeah, it would really on my part be a guess at this point. So you know, I think we could all kind of guess on some of the things of if people are really hunkered down and just choosing not to get out and turn it in, or if they haven't seen a, you know, electronic way to do that and that kind of thing. There might be some mobility happening too, right? As people may be moving in with other families or that kind of thing. So, you know, at this point, it would be a little bit of a speculation on my part, but we are, you know, we've put signs on every school campus fence and that sort of thing. We've put, you know, the Baywood information on like LOVR, but, you know, with people being inside, it you know, it's a little tricky. So, you know, we are trying to do our part to communicate the best we can, and have done a lot of outreach to preschools and Head Starts and things like that as well. So just hoping the word gets out that we need, you know, we want to hear from you. If you have an incoming kinder, you know, please call and let us know, and call the school site where your neighborhood school is. And we just want to keep getting that word out.
Is there anything that we could put on the website? Do you think that would be helpful? Do you feel like we're covered there?
We can sure try. Yeah, we could sure absolutely look for other avenues.
Thanks.
Mr. Unger and Mr. Buckman.
Hi, Kim, so I don't know if you'll be addressing this later, but this morning in the Washington Post and their Daily 202, they spent a great deal of time talking about the upcoming mental health crisis that our country will be facing. And I'm thinking about our students in particular. You know, we've talked in the past about how some of this could be an adverse childhood experience. what are we thinking about mental health services for our kids? And again, I'm not sure if this is the time or if you want to discuss this later, but I am interested in that because I think we're going to have a lot of kids. They're going to need a lot of support.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. So later I will discuss it more because in our, what I'm kind of thinking of as pre-LCAP, you know, starting to look at that document, we're really focused on three areas upcoming for just this one school year, which would be our, you know, academic part, but then the other two areas are supports and then the culture of care. And as you well know, our culture of care with social emotional learning, having counselors, MFTs, interns, and having a focus on that, we're thinking along the same lines, academic supports and the mental health supports for our students. The other thing to think about is even in this virtual environment, our counselors are doing incredible jobs of being really intentional, being targeted, being deliberate about reaching out to individual students, about still holding group meetings, about having kids together in small groups in situations like this where they've been used to having those groups and they can still continue to meet in these ways. So through Family Resource Center, through, you know, our current employees and counselors, along with, I hear so much about office staff going out of their way to contact families and to check in on people. You know, I just, as a mom, have had two site reps call and just say, hey, just checking to see how things are going. Do you need help with anything? So I think a lot of that outreach helps us to stay in touch with how people are doing and to ensure that those supports are happening now. And you're right, we're well aware that we're going to need to be really in tune with that as we come back as well.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks, Ellen. Kim, two things that come to mind. One, we're putting hotspots into homes that we hadn't before in a large volume. I'm hoping, or have you considered that parents that have not had the ability to reach out to the schools electronically and to use technology, if there's some way, or if you've thought about whether we need to have some training for the parents as well, just so they're monitoring their kids, that kind of stuff. And the second thought is a lot of daycare centers in this community, a lot of preschools, and whether that is a place where we might reach out or have you already reached out to track whether there are potential kindergartners. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. Good information about parents, the information they need around hotspots and usage. And I do know that some of that information goes out whenever they deliver it, just checking with them on, you know, are you, you know, understanding it. Also with our ISNT, they did an amazing job of converting their helpline to not just be about internal helpline, but external, helping the whole community as well. And the other thing with, really because of Baywood, we went out of our way this year to really be deliberate about talking about kinder enrollment with child cares and preschools. So I do think in that way, we've made a great effort. I think we can continue to maybe brainstorm. Are there other ways that we can keep getting the word out?
I mean, you guys are just so ahead of the curve. It's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Roger.
Thank you. Kim, I have two questions. I'm wondering if you're able to tell us how down our kindergarten enrollment is this year compared to, say, an average of the last, you know, 5 years, or are we down that significantly?
Yeah, I think it's, Ryan may have it exactly, but about between 85 and 100 less right now than we typically have.
That's correct.
Yeah, that is significant for sure. Okay, and then my second question was, in thinking about the hotspots, as times become more difficult for families and they have to make decisions about where they can tighten their belts, their internet access may be one of the first things to go. In which case do we have, and I know that Mr. Kellish is around somewhere, if you don't know, but do we have a surplus of hotspots so that people, as they are making these hard decisions, if that's the one they make, they know to come to us and that we will have one available?
I know that we have them available right now, and we will definitely keep an eye on if we start to get low on that, that we'll definitely keep an eye on the pace at which they're being checked out and ensure that we order more if we need to.
Thank you.
You bet.
I'll just say that I have the great good fortune, as do all of you who may not know it, that Mr. Kalish is sitting here with me during this to make sure we're going all right from a technology standpoint. He just sent a message that said we have 130 extra. And he's done a fabulous job working with Ms. McGrath to make sure that, he's done a ton of outreach to make sure kids are connected and have what they need. So he's someone who's always in the background, but I'm pointing to him right here.
Literally in the background, yeah.
All right. Any other questions for Ms. McGrath?
On the kindergarten numbers too, just for the board to know, you know, we average in the low fives. So the last year was 530, or this year I should say is 535 kinders. The year before that was 515. The year before that was 450. So this just may be a 450 year, you know, or we may receive more and or have more signups over the next couple of months. We'll see how that goes.
And I also want to say, if I could, that if you drive around downtown San Luis, especially on Orcutt, you're going to see massive apartments being built. And if they're not done yet, they're in the process. They look to me like they're 3/4 of the way done. So we suspect that we're going to have a late enrollment period, potentially in August, when those apartments potentially open up. So we're mindful of this. Certainly it's speculative, but when I drive around and look at what's being built around town, the city of San Luis is doing a good job of building higher density homes or apartments that might incur younger families to move in this area, which we'll be waiting for them if they come.
Our next item is Measure D update.
Yeah, so as the board knows, we have a study session next week on the 14th. And so the primary focus of that meeting will be to go over the current status of Measure D budget projects. We've been able to get everything up to date to this point. So I look forward to kind of sharing that information with you. On a positive note, they are filling the pool at San Luis Obispo High School, I think beginning this afternoon. So that's going on. Hopefully you got to see the wonderful drone shots that Chris Bonin took last week that we put out to the parents and staff in our weekly communications. Was nice to see. So projects are moving forward as we move forward, and we're taking every chance we can get to kind of get a jump start on moves and classrooms and setting up the library at Slo High, those types of things. During these next few months, as we know, kids are gone. So it's definitely helped us in terms of hopefully getting our timelines to move a little bit quicker.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers. 1 second.
You're muted, Catherine. Go ahead.
You're good.
Okay. So the pool is being filled today. When do you anticipate it will be in use, available for use?
As soon as the governor allows people to be back to get, no, you know, it'll be ready in the fall for the kids, right? I mean, or sooner if they're able to use it, but it normally takes about a month for them to get the chemicals, get the water, get everything correct. So, you know, by June, it should be ready to go for student use if it's available to be used.
Thank you.
Anything else? I know Mr. O'Connor's in the background there, so good for you. Happy to have this moving forward, and you've been doing a great job keeping your eye on the ball, so thank you. All right, next is item 9.01, resolution 17-19-20, order of election.
Yes, this resolution is mandated by Ed Code and Election Code. And so what I'm asking for you to approve tonight is the resolution ordering the election to be held to fill the vacancies in Trustee Area 1, which is the San Luis Obispo area and local environments. Those are currently held by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers and Mr. Millar. And then Trustee Area 2, that is Mr. Unger. And so this particular resolution simply acknowledges that these three positions will be open at the election in November 2020.
All right. So any discussion? Any questions? Discussion by the board? Seeing none, then I would appreciate, Mrs. Roger.
I'll move the resolution.
Thank you. Do we have a second? Mr. Buckman? Then this is doesn't matter what kind of vote it is. We need a roll call vote. So, Mrs. Roger.
Aye.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mrs. Frank.
Yes.
Mr. Millar.
Aye.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Aye.
And aye for me. So that carries. 7-0. Next, item number 9.02, resolution number 18-19-20, consolidation of election.
And this resolution allows for the said trustees in those trustee areas to be placed on the general ballot in November, which saves our district money. So this is a consolidation resolution.
Any discussion, questions, comments by the board? Anyone would like to get this ball rolling with the motion? Mrs. Roger?
I'll move resolution 18-19-20.
And a second, please.
I'll second.
All right, we have a motion by Mrs. Roger, a second by Mrs. Frame. Again, a roll call vote. Mrs. Roger?
Aye.
Frame?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenbeth Rogers. Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mr. Millar. Mr. Millar.
Yes. 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 1,000 times, yes.
Yes, thank you. And yes for me as well. This motion also carries 7-0. Our next item is resolution number 19-19-20, employee appreciation.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, perfect. So I think all of you know that we have amazing employees in this district, and I think especially at this point in time, you can see really how incredible everybody is. And next board meeting, we're putting together an employee recognition video. So you're going to be able to see across the district what people have done in food service, bus drivers, teachers, counselors, nurses, administrators, you name it. You're going to see every employee group in a video that we're putting together to recognize our employees. So for tonight, this is the resolution of employee appreciation for all of our employees, CSEA, SEIU, and SLCTA, and I'd like to read the resolution to you. You can also see in the board packet letters of support from the SLCTA President, Emily Capilano, the CSEA President, Carrie Trujillo, and the SEIU President, David Rodriguez. So I'll go ahead and read this for the board. Whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education believes that every student has the right to access high-quality educational programs to further their academic and personal success, and whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education
believes that quality educational programs are made possible thanks to the dedicated, talented, innovative, and hardworking educators and support staff who have chosen public service as their calling. And whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education acknowledges the extensive skill and effort required to provide individualized educational opportunities for students, and whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education further acknowledges the challenges faced by our educators, staff, students, and families during the current unprecedented global pandemic that has forced schools to provide student instruction through distance learning. And whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education is fortunate to have a team of skilled educators, staff, and administrators who have taken on the role of essential workers, making it possible for students to continue to learn during this uncertain time. And whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education is proud to recognize the team of public service heroes who have responded to the call to service in service to the community at large in this emergency situation. And whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education believes that the San Luis Coastal Unified School District team serves as a model of public service and pride for our community. And whereas the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education believes that such a team deserves the gratitude, respect, and recognition from the board, students, parents, and the entire community. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Education proudly proclaims the month of May 2020 as Employee Appreciation Month to include the California Day of the Teacher, Tuesday, May 13th, 2020, and the Week of Classified Employees, May 17th to the 23rd of 2020, and recognition of support and administrative staff. In making this declaration, the board honors the San Luis Coastal Unified School District team for dedicating their lives and service to promoting the success of our children and our community.
Thank you. I just want to state for the record, Kristen, we're going to come right back to this, but on our previous items, there was no public comment, but I need to be being a little more forthright about this. Is there any public comment on this item? Okay, thank you. And we have people in the background letting me know whether we do or not. So at this time, I see Ms. Frame, followed by Mr. Buckman, followed by Mr. Unger.
Well, I would just like to reiterate what a fantastic job every single employee has done in this COVID time, from our administrators to our teachers and to, bus drivers and custodial staff and food service staff. So again, I know I was going to make a motion for this resolution, but I don't know if any other board member wants to make a comment, but it's with deep appreciation and gratitude to all employees that I would make a motion for resolution 19-19-20 employee appreciation.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman, then Mr. Unger.
Yeah, so I'd be proud to make the second on Evelyn's motion, and I have a contact with school districts across the state, and I just have to say it's amazing how quickly this district responded, and with days we had home learning and the schools are being clean. It's just, I mean, people ask how we did it, and it's just because we have a great staff.
Mr. Unger?
And I just wanted to add that I'm fortunate to be able to talk to teachers almost every day. And just to recognize the hard work that the teachers and just everybody in the district, all the classified staff are doing. We couldn't do it without you, and I just want to thank you all.
Any other comments? I would just add that this is a time when true colors shine through, and the colors of our employees are bright and vibrant and strong, and we very much are aware of you out there. So thank you so much. We have a motion by Ms. Frame and a second by Mr. Buckman. Mr. Millar, you're unmuted, so I will ask for your vote.
Aye.
Thank you. Ms. Roger.
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Frank?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Aye.
And I vote in favor as well. So that carries 7-0. Thank you, everyone. Thanks, Kristen, for presenting that. Next, we have our, I see Ms. Frost waiting for a moment here, a 10.01 Combined Schools Graduation Committee update.
Thank you. I'm going to grab this presentation, if you'll just give me a second. And you should be seeing a full screen, a screened presentation, if I'm correct, at this point. Very good. All right. So I'm Diane Frost. I'm the Director of Student Support Services, and today I'm presenting for you on a combined schools graduation committee that I am facilitating this year. You all know that I'm the Director of Student Support Services. I think I've been asked a couple of times, why, Diane, are you running this committee? And I think there's a couple of things. I think most of you know that I have two children who are seniors right now. So I understand personally the great need for these kids to celebrate a graduation, to celebrate their time in San Luis Coastal. I also think that the kids themselves, having gone through our schools, deserve this. And then finally, as a former administrator, I know how important all of these promotions are to our kids. So Dr. Prater asked me to facilitate this committee, and I was really happy to do so. Let's see if I can. There we go. I wanted you to see who's on the committee because it's an impressive representative group. We've got about 22, 23 members. Two of our board members are on this committee. Catherine Eisendrath Rogers and Mark Buckman serve on this committee. We have staff members from San Luis Obispo High School and Morro Bay High School. You'll see that we have the ASB teachers, we have counselors, we have administrators from those schools, we have the senior class advisors, so very representative of the staff at both of the comprehensive high schools. And then we have students, and we have some amazing students sitting on this committee. They're all seniors, and they all serve in some type of role on their campuses. They might be senior class president, they might be senior class officer, but they're very, very involved in their schools, and they're very, very connected to their peers. And that was critical for us. We wanted students on this committee who would speak to us about what they wanted and what their peers wanted as well. And then we also have a parent from each high school on this committee. So again, an impressive committee together for this very, very important subject. So we had some priorities, and we've come together twice as a group, and we will be coming together again. Our primary objective was the graduation ceremony planning for our students. And we've spent quite a bit of time talking about the graduation ceremony. But we also know that there are many events for our seniors that they don't want to move on without experiencing. We've talked about a prom. We've talked about awards events at all of our high schools and how important they are to our students. We've spoken a little bit about grad night as well. So those were very important subjects to our students, as well as the graduation ceremony. We also talked about other ways that we might be able to celebrate these children, this class of 2020, outside of the big events. We've talked about yard and window signs, and I can tell you a little bit more about that. We've talked about all of the social media celebrations. If you follow either or both Morro Bay High School and SLO High School ASV on Instagram, you'll really be amazed at the work that they're already doing. I think both high schools were represented beautifully by students at the beginning of this meeting. They're staying involved. They're keeping the kids involved. And I think it's really impressive. One of the really important things that we decided as a group was that we wanted to survey
students and parents regarding their thoughts about important events and the actual graduation ceremony. And what I have for you next are some of the results. So this is San Luis Obispo High School students, and we did kind of a very directed survey. We had about 280 San Luis High School students respond, and we asked them about a June in-person ceremony, an August in-person ceremony, and a December in-person ceremony, and asked them to rank their preference. We also asked them about virtual ceremonies. SLO High School, you'll see here, 6 is the most optimal. Clearly, they would like a June in-person ceremony. And we needed to hear that from them, but I don't think anybody was surprised. But when we talked about August versus December, you'll see that our students would rather have an August opportunity than a December opportunity. And this December question literally said, I'd like a December in-person event and I will make myself available for it. Remember, our kids are moving on to another, to other experiences, to career, to college, that type of thing. We wanted to make sure if we did this, they were coming back for it. So they're clearly telling us June, but they're saying that August is their second choice. In terms of virtual, our students told us that they are not really interested in a virtual ceremony at all. They really want something in-person or social distancing if possible. So that's SLO High School. Morro Bay High School had shy of 100. I think they were in the 80s. Students respond. Same thing. Clearly want the in-person June, but would rather have an in-person August than an in-person December. In terms of our parents, this is our parent input, and this is SLO High and Morro Bay High School together, their responses. Again, June is big. August, way more of our families would prefer an August in-person opportunity to a December in-person opportunity. And again, the virtual is not something that our kids are wanting to experience, that they don't want that to be their primary ceremony. So this just gives you a little bit easier look at what our students and parents told us. So here's preferred June in person. You can see pretty consistently across the board. August in person went from 81 to 78, 82 to 70, and again 90 to 81. But then when we come down to our December in person, we see quite a bit of a decline. So they're telling us August in person. You can see our virtual numbers, less than 5% of our SLO students, less than 5% of our Morro Bay students for June, less than 10% of our Morro Bay students even wanted to consider an August opportunity. So again, we feel like our students and parents were telling us that an August in person, if possible, is what they wanted. So we do have a recommendation. The survey tells us, and the group of kids who we're working with, each high school will plan a traditional football field event and a social distancing event. We absolutely understand that we may not be able to offer the same type of in-person event that other classes have been able to enjoy over the years. August social distancing and gathering requirements will dictate which event is held. The committee is going to meet several more times so that we can go through the fine details, so that we can keep looking at the governor's recommendations, the CDE, and our own public health department. And then as we look at actually having a day to start planning for, we've said that SLO High School is moving forward with planning an August 8th event, and Morro Bay High School is moving forward with planning an August 7th event. The committee very much understands that we're not able to say right now exactly what that event is. Is it a parade through town with social distancing? We get a lot of information about using the drive-in in our area and doing social distancing. Is it possible that we have several graduation ceremonies on a single day so that we can cut down the number of kids? All of that is being discussed. Like we said earlier, celebrating in June is really important to our kids. Our high schools are already purchasing yard and window signs and should have them in hand by the beginning of next week, and they're working on getting them out to our students. We're also looking at a local and distant celebrities virtual acknowledgement, and one of our board members is helping us out with that quite a bit. And both schools are looking at a couple of virtual celebration, Pirate Awards, Senior Showcase, for example. So all of those are being planned. You probably noticed that this committee was comprised of Morro Bay High School and SLO High School. The principal of Pacific Beach, Chris Dowler, decided that he felt it better that he have his own committee at Pacific Beach. They really have different events that they offer their students at the end of every year, and he wanted to have those conversations with his smaller group. He had parents, students, and staff members meet, and this is what they've decided. They'd really love to have their ceremony in J2 of the district office, as they always do, and they're willing to reduce the number of graduates, do several opportunities throughout the day. They would have a drive-up ceremony at a larger venue. They'd postpone until September. They weren't thinking August. They'd have a drive-through at the district office, and they'd hold a Zoom ceremony as a very, very last option. So Pacific Beach, very involved, just really came together with their own group. And then finally, our next steps, our combined schools graduation committee will continue to meet to analyze our current social distancing and sheltering requirements, and then continue planning. And I know we're going to do another survey. As we get closer and closer to the summer, as some of our restrictions are lifted or not, we'll be sharing some ideas with the rest of the community. I think that kind of gives you an idea of where we are in terms of the combined graduation committee. I think we've accomplished a lot, but I think we have a ways to go as well. I'd love to answer any questions you might have. And I saw Mr. O'Connor on the screen. He may be able to answer some questions as well.
First, I'd like to go to the public and see if anyone from the public would like to talk about this issue. And it appears there is no one. Thank you. And then, Ms. Frost, if you wouldn't mind to not share your screen anymore so that I can see the board. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mandy.
All right. Then I would like to come back to the board. Any questions or comments from the board? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
I do want to just say how, and I think you can imagine, but it's when you're in the room with these students, it's really palpable how bereft they are, you know. And so it's, you know, under any circumstances when you're not quite ready for what is in front of you, it's hard to make a decision down the road. So this is a challenge to try to be realistic about when and if these things can happen and how that will happen. But, you know, you have to, your heart really goes out to these kids because they're really sad about the situation that they find themselves in, but they're at the same time working very hard to make this work for everybody. So I'm proud of them for that.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman.
Yeah, I'd like to second what Catherine said. It's really, you really can hear it. And the second thing again is to thank staff and the students and the parents for pulling together and working hard to make something special for these kids.
Right. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. Ms. Frost? Thank you. Thanks very much. Really appreciate it. And thanks to everyone for their work on this. All right. Our next item is 10.02 for priority one, achievement for all, distance learning, student engagement. I think that's Ms. McGrath.
Great. Ms. Dawson, do you mind sharing the attachment?
Great. So thank you, Mandy. So today, just wanted to talk to you about the focus that the district has had on ensuring that students are really engaged with us during this distance learning. So as you know, in a regular traditional environment, one of our goals is to have students as engaged as possible, right? When students are engaged, learning happens. And we think about this from a mental health, from a healthy relationship place, as well as from an academic and from a learning place. So one of the things, knowing that we're in this environment and that part of this environment is isolation, we said, how can we start ensuring right from the beginning that students are engaged and are with us? So a couple of things took place. One is that we created a district-wide system. We've asked each site to create their site-based system for following up with it, but the expectation and the monitoring of it is the same district-wide. So what that looks like is a couple of things. One is ISNT looked at, can we look at Chromebook logins, or can we look at Google logins to be able to use data to say, does that give us some information about student engagement? The second part of that is that teachers are reporting to administrators how much engagement they have and who is engaged. So in general, I want to tell you a couple of things. One is that our engagement rates, compared to what we're hearing around our area, around the state, and really around the nation, our engagement rates are incredible, are nothing short of incredible. And people say, have asked, how are you doing that? Just as Ellen mentioned earlier, I will tell you, first of all, we have staff members that value kids being connected to them, and they value the connection with kids. And people have also taken extreme steps. I mean, countless text, phone calls, emails, even home visits when we were allowed to do so, even home visits with social distancing, knocking on a door saying, kiddo, we've been missing you. Is everything okay? And what do you need to get this going? And so people have gone above and beyond to ensure that they have students engaged with them. The other thing that I will tell you with this is that you're going to see a number and a percentage of students that have participated in online learning to some extent. The level and the extent within that can vary. So what we've done as a school district is created tiers. So the secondary level, of course, the number of students they have and just the complexity of secondary schools, we've been really deliberate about these three tiers. So I'll point that out and show it to you as we go through these school sites. So we'll start with Baywood here. You can see Baywood has about 360 of their 366 students that have engaged to different levels, so a 98% engagement rate. You can see there that they have this comprehensive site spreadsheet. They track weekly work completion. They track attendance in class, meetings and small groups, family connections, and continue to look at that. One thing that we noticed from the data that we've tried to create from Chromebook logins or from Google logins is that it's not great in a couple of ways. One is when a student opens their Chromebook and then they just leave it open and they don't close it ever, or they don't ever log out and they don't log back in, it just shows us that one-time login. So it can be, you know, it can look like they haven't logged in when the teacher's like, no, I'm getting lots of work from them. The other thing is, our youngest students, we wouldn't expect to, kindergarten isn't, not all of them are in Google Classroom and that kind of thing, but they are doing things like ST Math and Seesaw and those sort of things. So they can check in that way also for work completion. If you keep scrolling down, Mandy, you'll see that each school site has noted their percent. And then if you don't mind stopping when you get to Del Mar, noted, you'll see some of the elementary school version kind of the tiered portion there. So you can see that the site said all students that hadn't logged in based on the data were the TK through first grade students. And so you see where they noted, here's the other platforms that they are using. So they've been in touch with 100% of their families, 100% have done at least some work. And then you can see here where they broke down the three tiers, right? Here's the percentage, the large majority that are consistently engaging. 12% you can see here sometimes, and 9% are rarely. So that's where the supports kick into place, right? And where we continually know who we need to keep touching base with if they're in the sometimes or the rarely categories. Okay, if you'll keep scrolling down, Ms. Dawson, to the secondary, when you get to lambs and loams, you'll see. So here they've spelled out at a secondary level real specifically. At tier one, all the schools are in the 70-ish range. No one's under 70 for that tier one. So Laguna, you can use it as an example here. 100% of the students have engaged at some level. 70% are consistently, you know, ongoing, you know, engaged with all the classes. Tier two has 18%. That means that they might, you know, they might not connect with every single class consistently every single time. And the tier that should say three is at 12%. And that 12% is they've only been doing it a little, only a couple classes here and there or inconsistently. And these are the students here that they have to keep following up with. Okay, if you keep scrolling down a little, you'll see a similar pattern there. At Loams, it's getting some really strong results there. And then Morro Bay, as well as Slo High. So I know, as we've already talked about before, the sites are doing an incredible job of staying on top, using their office staff, using counselors, using a variety of methods to get in touch, stay in touch, and to keep following up. Because I think one of the things we'll have to be careful of is to kind of keep that, you know, that gas on the pedal, right? Is the longer this goes, the sustainability, you have to kind of hold the endurance with it. So I want to say that our engagement is incredible. I've had multiple people call me to say, hey, I was on this national conference and, you know, there was counselors talking about their lack of engagement or 30% are engaging and things like that. And we're not seeing that. I really attribute that to incredible people that value student relationships. So I think it's a lot of really positive things to report. Also shows that we need to continue to work towards ensuring they stay engaged. Any questions or things I can answer related to this?
Thank you. First, I need to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to speak to this? Right, seeing no one. I see Mr. Unger. Go ahead.
Yeah. So there were a couple of, and I wanted to thank Kim for her response to me, but there are a couple of things that I think I would just like to surface, and maybe Kim, you could expand on it a little bit. And the first thing I know that I said was, it looks like in a way, especially on the elementary, each site is sort of doing its own thing in terms of determining what engagement looks like. So, my question for you was, do we have a plan district-wide to standardize that, sort of like what we've done with the report cards? Because I think that was tremendous what we've done there. And then also, just what kind of data you expect the state to be looking at? Because I think that's what some of the data that the state's going to be looking at is our levels of engagement and how we define that. And then secondly, how can we use this data to help us when we start the new school year, to determine the levels of the students?
Yeah, I think all three are great questions, Chris. I would say that parts are district-wide and kind of standardized, and then parts are site-specific. So the first part is there are district-wide expectations that every site has ongoing engagement with students and that are following up. And we have these three tiers, and we also have defined what it means to be in each tier and what kind of follow-up should happen. That it starts with a teacher, that it starts with an email, it starts with a phone call, it starts with the teacher following up, and when they're struggling, they're handing it off to the next person. Now, a site may say, hey, the next person you hand it off to is like Slow High, for example, has a form that the teacher fills out that then goes, and then they start routing it to who's going to follow up next and where it's going to go, depending on what they're hearing. So there's a combination of district-wide expectations and district-wide procedure, but then each site is coming up with their site-based system that works for them. Obviously, what we do at Pacific Beach, right, where they have one spreadsheet that has every kid's name on there and every teacher is commenting on every kid on an ongoing basis, right? Versus Slow High that has more of a form turned in, a quick routing system so that it stays efficient. So common expectations, but then on their site level, then it does vary a little to make sure they're meeting their site needs. Second question was kind of state expectations. So what I can tell you maybe tell you now instead of in the next presentation is that one of the LCAP adjustments that the state made was that they said we're going to have a one-year LCAP, and we're also going to ask for a narrative report from each school district reported to them about the steps that we've taken to address school closures and, what steps we've taken. I haven't seen specific percentage engagement data being requested. It's more, tell us about what steps you took in food services. Tell us about what steps you took for learning, et cetera. So I haven't seen them yet, Chris, ask for a specific percentage, but I do think we would be ready for that if we were asked to create it. Remind me of your third question.
I'm sorry, the last question was, how can we use this data to really help inform our instruction when we begin the school year next year?
Yeah, that is a great point. That is part of what we're talking about is what pre-assessments, what supports, what information is going to be needed, because to me there's two combined pieces. People talk about the students that they had in person, that they knew there was an academic or mental health struggle before they physically left. And then if a student has disengaged or is just rarely engaging, it's creating additional potential learning holes. So looking at what that information, how we can pre-assess that. And as we all know, teachers are masters at that, right? We're great in a school district at looking at what information do we have about a student? What are they missing and what can we do to address it? You're going to see in my LCAP presentation next that the big rocks that we are saying that we need to address this year address some of those exact issues, because we know that there's some things being created right now that we're going to need to be intentional about.
Thank you.
Anyone else? I just wanted to briefly say, I called Kim about this sheet couple of days ago because I thought maybe it was old information that was right when the school closure had first taken place. I was surprised at the level of engagement. I was expecting to have seen it drop off by now. That's what I've been hearing from other districts. And she said, nope, this was updated as of this past Thursday. So that is really good news. And the second piece is, I know that our tiers are different. These measurements are not what we use under normal circumstances, but it almost appears to me that some students may be more engaged than they are during this regular student year in terms of turning in homework and hearing from teachers and all that kind of thing. And I know there's probably not comparing apples to apples, but it struck me that this level of engagement, and especially with the hands-on participation and involvement by teachers, is something that I'm sure some of our students haven't experienced before, and it's really paying off. So thank you to you, and once again, another reason to have maybe Employee Appreciation Month. So this is very good information. Thank you. All right, next we have item 10.03, board priority one, achievement for all local control accountability plan, or as we say, the LCAP. Ms. McGrath.
Great. So, Mandy, again, if you don't mind pulling up the document, I printed it nice and large for myself. Check this out here. So, I would love to tell you about the LCAP. So, I'm going to give you just quick catch up. As we know, the Local Control Accountability Plan, the goal of this is to address the needs specifically of what are the things that we need to do to go above and beyond for student groups that need extra supports. So that's our socioeconomically disadvantaged students. That's our English language learners, or ELs. That's our foster and homeless youth students. And then we always kind of go through this filter of special ed. So there's those groups that we have to be really thoughtful about. Some people mistakenly think of this plan as an entire district plan. And instead, you have to think of it as, what are we doing with these specific funds? And in our district, it's not like we receive additional funds. We're taking the funds that we have, and we're saying we're going to use this sliver of the funds. So for us, out of a $90-ish million budget, we're talking about around $6 to $7 million of that. Okay, how are we using those funds to go above and beyond for these student groups? So that is typically, and that is, you know, an overview of what an LCAP, a Local Control Accountability Plan, is about. So in a normal circumstance, we go gather input from a wide variety of groups. I give information to you, the board, all year long on the different groups that we're hearing from, what their input is, which direction we're, you know, heading because of the input, what we're thinking. We bring that to you for direction. As you know, in our study session, we went over a lot of, hey, here's what we're starting to hear. You know, here's kind of things that we think we need to head this direction. Interestingly enough, some of those big items and big rocks still absolutely make sense. We were already headed in the right direction because your goal for us, what one of our primary goals is, to close the achievement gap. This strange situation that we're in right now also speaks to a gap that is happening that we need to also be responsive to. So in some ways, what we were already starting to create aligns with the situation that we're in. And so we have taken this input from what we thought was going to be the beginning of a three-year LCAP. Okay, now we had direction in Gavin Newsom's executive order that this is going to be a one-year LCAP. So let me tell you about the change that we heard. We heard a few things. We heard, number one, that this will be a one-year LCAP only, and that is moved to a due date of December 15th. Okay, December 15th. For us, we said, there's just no way that we can wait, or that we should wait as an organization till December to set direction, to set these goals, and to set these things moving. As you know, sometimes it impacts staffing. It impacts other issues that we can't wait mid-year to do. So for us, we want to get this started and get these goals and direction moving forward. Also, our students hopefully are coming back in August, and we need to have things ready and supports ready for them. And some of these things are vital to ensure that we have the proper things prepared to do the right things for kids that are going to come back with additional needs. The other thing to think about is, like, the legislature is still determining, like, the annual update, for example. We do not have local indicators that are due in June. The three-year LCAP will now begin in 21 to 24. Okay, so this is like a one-year exception. So that's one of the ways I want you to think about it, is what do we need to accomplish this year, knowing that students need strong instruction, they need supports, and they need a focus on mental health. The other thing is the report, and I think I told you about that earlier. Okay, so we will bring that with the budget. That's due before July 1st. So that narrative report will need your approval, and that was one of the pieces within his executive order. Okay, is that part clear? Okay, great. So what I would love to go over with you is here's what I'm thinking of as pre-LCAP. Okay, our official LCAP doesn't have to happen until December. Like I said, we need to get these things in place. Our kids need us to have this direction of strong instruction, strong supports, an intentional culture of care with social emotional focus. Okay, so you'll remember that we talked about that we used to have 5 focus areas. And we talked about moving that to 3 focus areas: rigorous, relevant, engaging instruction and curriculum, multi-tiered system of support, culture of care. 4 and 5 used to be tech, which we're saying we need to incorporate that into what we're doing, and data. And we're saying we need to incorporate that into what we're doing. That would give us these 3 focus areas. The 3 focus areas would still be great instruction is number 1, support is number 2, and a culture of care is number 3. Okay, I'd love to go over with you. I won't read you every word, but we've had stakeholder input and we've tried to be very responsive to the stakeholder input. And you'll see that in the actions and in the goals. So Mandy, if you don't mind scrolling down a little, if you can get the green part, here we go, students. So if you'll go up a little, we'll start with the student part. So what did we hear from students? We heard from students that they want to be engaged. They want to be challenged in something rigorous in a real world experience, right? They wanted this focus on, give us those skills that are college career ready, right? That we want things that we don't want it to feel like busy work. When it comes to the second area, supports, students said, yeah, I need academic assistance. I need tutoring or I need other supports. I need help sometimes meeting my graduation requirements. I need help from teachers or from other students. And then from a culture of care, students said, caring adults that are attentive to us, that create a welcoming, great atmosphere, matters to us. That a personal relationship, not personal in like, I need to know what you did last night, or but we want to connect with people, right? Students said that loud and clear, that we want people that have a great environment and that teachers are a big part of that. And they also talked about, kind of the bullying, the harassment. We want people to be sensitive and thoughtful in their words, and we need to do our part of that. When you go down a little, you look at the parent, the community input. So what parents said about great instruction is same thing. We want you focused on effective, engaging instruction. We want skilled teachers with small class sizes and more science and science teachers and responsive teaching practices and life skills and career technical education and some cultural awareness training for teachers. I will note one thing here. We definitely hear small class size when we survey the different groups. And small class size is probably not a good LCAP expense, right? You have to think about what are the things that you can specifically point to that say these address these student groups. Socioeconomically disadvantaged, EL, foster, homeless youth. Something we look at, and Ryan does a great job of trying to ensure that those classes are a really manageable level, but not great for LCAP. The second thing you'll see there is supports that we heard from parents. Yes, we need individualized support. We need interventions. We need after school and extra opportunities. And then they listed lots of different ways that you support students there, even with extra support for Title I schools. And then in our third, our culture of care, parents said, it's also important to us to have a really accessible, caring staff, that we're interested in a social emotional curriculum, that we're looking for counseling and mental health supports and professional development that teaches, respect for others and equity and really looking at these SELs and behavior supports. Evelyn, did you have a question?
For your response, you gave me a really detailed response about prior questions, but I just had a thought as you were talking about the parents and community, and it's something that just occurred to me. If, the LCAP is focused per the state on really the unduplicated students, correct?
Correct.
So I you know, when I look at, you know, stakeholder input, is the stakeholder input weighted towards what those parents from unduplicated parents, you know, their input, since it's really those students and those families? It's not something I ever really thought about, but I didn't know.
It's a great question. So in some ways, like in our survey, obviously we put the survey out to everyone, but in other ways, we're much more intentional and deliberate about asking what makes a difference for you. So for example, in DLAC, Mr. Mayfield will get input from DLAC parents. From our LCAP scrolling down. So the next part is what did we hear from staff? So from staff, you're going to see a lot of similar things, but we heard we need, you know, preparation, time to work together. We have an incredible career technical education program, and we need to keep a focus on that, on real life skills, on more EL, smaller class sizes, and enrichment programs. What we heard from around supports is, yes, please continue to analyze, continue to implement effective interventions. We need support staff, programs like AVID, English language development. We need before and after school support programs. We need more interventions. We need behavior and social emotional interventions and push and support and reading interventions. And then for our final one, social emotional, kind of this culture of care, again, staff said, positive, encouraging adults that connect with each child each day. I loved that. I think that was a beautiful way to say it. Counseling and mental health supports with social, emotional, intentional learning. Equity, you can see more support in classrooms, teacher training, social, emotional wellness. So here is the kind of summary of all of the input. Okay, of course, this doesn't capture every single person's each word, but groups of people look for what are the patterns of input. So here are those patterns. And I think you can start to see, you know, you can see throughout the kind of some threads. So I think what you'll find is that our actions support these threads of input. So if you'll keep scrolling down for me. Great. So the last two boxes here, what you're going to find is our outcomes and then our actions. Since this is a 1 year kind of, you know, they're kind of just taking a section of time and saying we're holding off on the 3 year plan. We're doing this 1 year plan. Like I said, actually not due to December, but we all know this needs to happen in the fall right away. That's what you're going to see here. What are the big rocks? Our goal is also not to overwhelm, knowing that there's, you know, we've heard this hammer and dance analogy, right? We might be in a dance back in the fall. So we don't want to be overwhelming, but we do want to have really clear direction and really clear goals that we know are important and our kids are going to need. So the outcomes here, I'm a little bit, you know, we're all kind of guessing a little, but we're assuming we'll still have the CASP coming up at the end. We'll be able to implement our district common assessments. We'll have LPAC and the science test. We can still look at CTE pathway completion rates. We're going to talk about iInnovate more and creating lessons and looking at how much lesson development has taken place for iInnovate and college and career readiness. In focus two, we would still look at CASP and district common assessment data, but it would be for the student groups. Then we would look at how we created the system of interventions, because that would be the key. It's about creating a system that's targeted and intentional. We would look at AVID success data, online distance learning, such as APEX completion rates and special education inclusion rates. And then our third focus over here, culture of care, we would be looking at attendance, suspension, expulsion, and then our usage data around ARIES and Parent Square. Okay, so let me talk you through this last box here, which are the actions.
Thanks, Andy. So the first one, like we said, first best instruction. So what is it that we need to do next based on that input and where we are in this interesting time for this 1 year? The first thing is further develop our instructional strategies. You'll remember in our board study session when I talked about CIA with supports, right? So you have curriculum, instruction, assessment with support. And we talked about we've had this focus on curriculum, and we've had some focus on assessment. Well, we've been missing that I for a while. And we need to work on together research-based high-impact instructional strategies, okay? We also need leadership to do that. We're going to need people dedicated to instructional strategy development as well as an MTSS system. One of the things that I'm going to propose is between a 0.5 and a 1.0 principal that's on special assignment to help lead and champion this work, because we're going to need to be targeted and really intentional about creating this for this year. So that's part of what I'm going to ask as part of our budget, to have a 1 year principal on special assignment that helps to lead this. That would be fantastic at developing district-wide stronger instructional strategies and also creating a tiered system of supports for us. Okay, next you'll see the second bullet, designated ELD. You'll remember you've heard from Mr. Mayfield and Ms. Addis about the ELD work that we've done this year. That work needs to continue, right? That's incredibly impactful for our English language learners. And that great instruction that happens in the classroom, that work needs to continue. Also, principal coaching, right? This is, it's not just on a classroom. Leadership matters, right? So how can we continue to work with our principals to help beef them up as really strong instructional leaders? New teacher supports. When new teachers come in, they need to understand the instructional components that we value in this district. And it's that time when they're a new teacher to say, you've had a lot of training. And in San Luis Coastal, here's how we do it. Here's what helps make us amazing, right? And here, let's help train you so that you can be part of having that incredible instruction. We're going to need some site-based summer planning time. We're also going to need to keep moving with iInnovate. So you'll remember, this is that collaborative project that we're working with the foundation. So the foundation got the $100,000 planning grant, where we started working and we asked David Curran, and we took a portion of his day, amazing teacher from Baywood, and he started working with teams of teachers on creating these really innovative lessons that they said, hey, let's take a lesson. Let's say you're a third grade teacher. Give us an example of a lesson that's just kind of, hey, right now, not all that great. But what if you added to it? What if you used our innovation labs to create a lesson that was integrative and that really stepped up and became amazing? So this work through iInnovate and through a collaborative agreement with the foundation has been some really incredible work, because what this does is it takes lessons that people may not be all that excited about, but gets teams of teachers together to say, how can we create a lesson that may involve more, more innovative ideas, using things like these innovation labs that we've been trying to beef up to create some incredible lessons that then teachers could then have ready, take it on, and implement. Part of what this iInnovate would need is one teacher that we are funding to help lead this, and the foundation is also willing to fund. So this would continue to be a collaborative effort. Okay, we're going to need to increase device purchases. Part of you've done an amazing job of really stepping that up and keep ratcheting it up each year, and we're going to need to keep moving that forward and keep those device purchases, not just at our same level, but increasing that. I think this environment that we're in kind of shows us that. Continuing focus on career technical education, as well as band and choir, because students are going to be hungry for hands-on learning, right? Imagine all this time being spent at home on a device, and people are going to be hungry for, you know, real digging their hands in and great educational experiences. So next one, systems of support. As I talked about, we're going to look at and propose to you principal leadership that would help create this system of supports, not just the once in a while things, you know, supports here and there, but system wide. How can we see more detailed? You'll remember I told you about the third grade pilot that we did at FastBridge that teachers were really speaking highly of. We need to continue that assessment. We need to look further into how can we get deeper information about where a student has holes and then get targeted about meeting that. This part we feel is key. The instructional development with support system is key for closing the achievement gap as well as meeting the needs of what students are going to come back to us with right now. We're going to need to be targeted about their academics, their supports, and their mental health. Evelyn, did you have your hand up?
When we're talking about the multi-tiered system of support and, you know, beefing that up, and I assume you're talking about this principalship, would it need to be a co between, elementary and secondary? Because I'm assuming what you're looking at is this multi-tiered system of support that goes, you know, all the way up the line so that by the, you know, you know, by the time they're in high school, most of these things are in place, and we would hope that some of them wouldn't even be needed. So maybe talk about that a little bit. Is that articulation?
Yes, you make a great point. So one of the ideas that we have right now is, remember how we heard that feedback about let's give extra support to our Title I schools. So when you think about where we're starting, when you start with this elementary focus of Baywood, Pacheco, Smith, Hawthorne, one of the ideas is if we have this principal on special assignment for 1 year and we have two MTSS teachers that are focused, one focused on two of the schools, the other focused on two of the schools, they're there helping to create what does it look like at the school site, but then creating a district-wide system. It's almost like that's their pilot ground. That's their testing ground, right? Where they're there in classrooms working on it. So that's our idea of starting with it, with this kind of more intentional system at elementary. And then you're right. We have some supports in place at middle school and high school level. And you're right. If we do this a great job, we're going to decrease the percentage of students that are needing it at that middle school and high school level. But work still needs to be done. And part of that is things like AVID. Part of that is things like you'll see of the co-teaching, things of how are we getting some of those other interventions at middle school and high school. So this is not a one-year fix. It's a one-year focus for us for sure, but this will be multi-year that we need to keep moving it up and keep analyzing through the grade levels.
Thank you.
Okay, so the MTSS model, I know we've been talking about that all year, and now to me is the perfect time. Kids are going to come back needing support. And so now's the time to really get focused and intentional, and let's do this for them. Interesting that we were kind of heading this direction anyway. And then now with this environment that we're in, I think it really just points to it, that we need to make this concerted effort and create this system of interventions for our kids that are going to need it. As you know, those intervention classes, a little bit the second bullet there, Evelyn, to what you're talking about it. Focus on what does that look like at secondary schools, as well as AVID, starting at, you know, sixth grade, seventh, eighth on up. These are students that are identified is exactly having that potential, having that individual determination, but they need someone walking them through it. Summer school, of course, we're having to figure out. We're going to create that reopening plan. Also looking, the next one you'll see there is the distance learning. Implementing APEX and even being creative about how do we take the best parts? How do we take the silver lining from this COVID-19 experience that we're in and hold on to any of those pieces so it can help our organization continue to move forward when it comes to distance learning. And then co-teaching, we've had great strides with that. So keeping a focus on that as well as preschool. So the final one here would be focus 3, our culture of care. And as we've been talking about through the board meeting today is our students are going to need social emotional supports and connectedness. And it's always been important to us. And again, this time that we're in right now really just kind of speaks to that we need strong academic, strong supports and strong social emotional supports. So putting funds towards keeping our elementary counselors, MFT services, our family advocates that have been doing an amazing job through all of this, social emotional learning. Also implementing ARIES will be big for us, really, in looking at how we can be targeted and specific about students and looking at data. Parent Square has been an incredible communication tool. We've really seen it shine through the situation that we're in. And then, of course, continuing our focus on equity. So like I said, this is kind of what I'm thinking of as the pre-LCAP. Okay, this would help is that kind of first blush. Of course, we'll bring it back again over and over, but it's that first blush of how do we help set the right direction and how do we help ensure that we're doing the right things to support students as they come back to us from these school closures. So for today, there's not an approval. All I'm asking of you today is to kind of think over this, digest this, think about what we're, you know, kind of what we're leaning towards and suggesting, and then we'll bring it back again to look at further. And we'll have more specific, you know, budget items and that kind of thing connected to it coming up. Happy to answer any more questions.
First, I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public wishing to on this item? Seeing no one, we'll come back to the board. Anyone from the board? Like we're good. Oh, Dr. Elizabeth Rogers.
I just wanted to, you know, give some thumbs up here to all the work that you've been doing there, Kimberly, because it's a fantastic product. And I realize that it's all being condensed now into a much shorter period of time. So in some ways that gives us a challenge to accomplish that just even faster. So that's okay. I love that it seems to me as though what I took from this was that the two pillars of this will be engagement of all students, which we, you know, we realize that that's our most important mission, and also the teacher supporting teachers for the quality of education and the high impact instructional support. Those are just amazing. And we've grappled with this for years, and I think you finally got it down to a fine point. And so I'm excited to see how we can execute that. So thank you.
My pleasure.
Looks like there's no one else. So thank you, Ms. McGrath, for that presentation.
Thank you. More to come. And of course, that we have a whole entire team that puts a lot of thought and effort into this. So I'm sure you'll be hearing from me and others as well. And if other feedback comes your way, keep sending it my way. We'd love to hear it. Thanks.
Thank you. All right. Our next item is 10.04. Award E-rate contract for district network electronics.
Ryan, is this you, the E-rate?
Yeah, so with our E-rate funds, basically for the board to know, we put it out to bid. You can see there we received three bids back. One was didn't have everything included in it. So we're recommending that the board approve the contract with AMS.
Is there anyone from the public here to address this item? No, so board discussion, Mr. Beckman.
So Ryan, can you give us some background on who AMS is, please?
The AMS is actually one of our, it's a group that has done a lot of business with us. They're currently doing the Los Osos fire alarm at the middle school there, the fire alarm system. So they've been on a lot of our work for Wi-Fi hubs, fire alarm systems, those types of things. That's the group.
Can I just ask a clarification? So are they a local company? Are they a California company?
They have a local branch here in the area, but they're a national company, but they have a branch that's here.
And then because they're on our sites now, was that part of the ability to offer this bid price?
you know, they just bid on, you know, they got the same set of details that everybody else got, right? So I don't know that it's any beneficial per se that they were able to do that, but you know, this is kind of a separate thing than what they're currently working on for the school district.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Ms. Roger.
Thank you. I don't have any of the paperwork in front of me because I can't do that with the iPad, but my memory is that we're being asked to approve an award in the amount of $300,000 and that amount didn't correspond to the successful bid amount. Ryan, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so there was a bid for the base bid was $262,781.57, and then there was a 10% contingency built in for $289,059.
So how did we get to $300,000?
That's a good question.
Do you want to pull this and bring it back?
No, actually what I'd like the board to do is approve this for $289,059.73 tonight, if that's possible.
Okay.
That might have just been a mistake in terms of they didn't finalize the bidding amount right at the bottom. So it should, I would ask the board to do the $289,059.73. Great catch.
So if there are no, if there's no further discussion, I'll move approval of this successful bid in the amount of $289,059.73. What was it?
$059.73.
Exactly.
Is there any further discussion among the board? All right. We have a motion by Mrs. Roger. Anyone wish to make a second? Mr. Unger. All right. Here we go. Mrs. Roger.
Yes.
Mr. Unger.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Dr. Eisengrath Rogers.
Yes.
Ms. Frame.
Yes.
Mr. Millard.
Yes.
And I will vote yes as well. So that motion carries 7-0.
Thank you very much.
Our next item is 10.05, approval of secondary school schedules for the 2020-2021 school year. Is that, Kristen, we can't hear you.
You have to unmute me. There you are. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, perfect. I can't unmute myself on this end. This is the approval for the secondary school schedules. As you may know, in our contracts, the teachers have the ability to vote on their own schedule. So these are the results from Laguna, Los Osos, Morobe High, and San Luis High. And you can see that that Laguna Middle School voted for continuation of their current instructional schedule. Los Osos Middle School voted in favor of a 5-6 class schedule, and you can see that there's a lot of details in with their schedule. Morobe High School voted in favor of a new hybrid schedule, and San Luis High voted in favor of their current trimester schedule.
Thank you. First, I'd like to go to the public. Is there anyone from the public who'd like to discuss this? No. All right, Ms. Roger, you had your hand right up. Then Mr. Unger.
Thank you. I wonder, Kristen, if you could give us just a very short course on what the Morobe modified schedule is.
You know what? I don't know if I can. Kim, are you there? And would you be able to do the new hybrid schedule for them? Are you aware of that?
What I can speak to is generally that they created a hybrid schedule last year, but their instructional minutes were off a bit, and I had to ask them to make an adjustment to ensure that their instructional minutes were enough. So they worked on adjusting that, adding a little to it. So it's not all that different than what they had last year, which is a mix of some small classes, some larger, longer classes in order to provide time for labs and more extensive work like that. So that's why it's a hybrid. It's called a mix of the typical size with the longer size.
Okay, so it's a modified block.
Do you have it
still
attached
retaining
there?
The block?
I would think that, is it attached there, Mandy, for to look at the
There's
exact
no block? Explanation.
Oh, gotcha.
We can give those to you. We'll do that in Friday updates. We can give you all the schedules for next year.
Okay, that's the only one that I question. The others were understandable to me. And I'm not going to hold up approval or anything, but I wonder if on in Friday notes, you would just be able to provide a brief explanation of what this modified schedule at Morro Bay.
Sure.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Unger, then Mr. Blackmine.
Yeah, thank you. Marilyn, that was exactly my first question was, what does the hybrid schedule look like? And I appreciate Kristen and Kim that you'd be sending that information off to us. One thing that we have had in the past is some figures on how the votes went. I'd be interested in finding out how the votes went as well. So if you could.
Sure, I can put that in the Friday notes as well.
If the rest of the board finds that that's information they'd like to have, I'd like to request that.
Yeah.
Thank you. Mr. Buckman?
Thanks, Ellen. Just wondering if some of these shifts that we're seeing are possibly bringing us to a more uniform schedule across the district, or whether there's been discussion between the staffs sitting down together.
I am unaware that there have been discussions between the two middle schools and the high schools regarding their schedules. Before the school closures, we had our instructional calendar meeting, and it's still really apparent that each school values their own particular schedule, even for like professional development days. It's hard to get them to sometimes even match those things or teacher work days because Los Osos and Morro Bay, just for instructional year, want to close their first semester out before the winter break. And Laguna wants an even split on their schedule. So they want one semester that's equal to the number of days of the second semester. So even among the instructional year, there isn't a lot of commonality between the thinking of the four schools.
Well, and Mr. Buckman, I would like to weigh in on this because it is an important topic. I am a big fan of coherence and alignment, as all of you know, and it's a tough one. But where I believe this will go is we will work really hard with our middle schools. I know what I'm hearing from them is that a 7-period day is a very important element to making sure that all kids get access and equity to programs, including electives. So, for example, at the middle level, if you're a struggling learner, you lose your single elective. I would like to work with both middle school principals next year in their programs to fold in this idea of what middle school needs, how to meet the middle school child's needs through the lens of equity. And it's going to take some time. And I think through that discussion, we're going to come up with a common schedule. But I need to do it organically with the staff and with the leadership of the middle schools. And personally, I'd like to do it through the schools to watch framework. More to come on that. Then at the high school, that's an ongoing conversation regarding schedule. It's just going to take us some time to get there. Marilyn, you had your hand up. And then Walt, I see, and Evelyn, okay.
Okay, Marilyn, start over, please.
Oh, the 7-period day at the middle school, which may be quite beneficial for the students, is a negotiated item, isn't it?
It sure is.
Yes.
And so that's the dilemma. And we have to get really creative in our priority setting with the collective bargaining process. So you'll be hearing that from me when we circle back around. And it may not have to be a big cost item. There might be some compromises along the way. There might be ways to do this. What we know is that the obvious need with students is access and equity to programs and opportunities. What's in the way is this idea of a 6-period day, and teachers teach 5 out of 6 periods. So we're going to have to get creative. And that's what my hope is. So it's an important question and a really important topic.
Mr. Millard and Ms. Frame.
Well, I don't remember seeing a schedule proposal at the middle school level as detailed as Los Osos Middle School's vote. And how does site administration feel about that? It seems like it's going to complicate their school schedule.
Now, typically, the principal is on board with it. I would be hearing a lot about it if the principal weren't engaged in those conversations. But it is, it's the function of the management team at the school site to actually do the vote for the, and they meet with administration and they talk about what they like and what they don't like and what schedules they want to put forward to a vote and all of that. And typically the administration is on board. I think it's very unusual to have 4 schools, secondary schools, we're really 5 when you include Pacific Beach, on 5 different calendars. That's just a very unique thing to San Luis Coastal. It's not typical of what most districts do because it does alter the instructional minutes between campuses and bell schedules and all sorts of things between the different schools. So this is very unique, but it's something that we have in our collective bargaining agreement that's important to teachers. And so it is going to take a lot, some discussion.
Well, I just want to make sure I'm clear on a couple of things. Notwithstanding that some of these schedules would impact the collective bargaining, it's my understanding that these votes by staff on schedules are advisory, that it's up to the board.
Ultimately, the board can vote that you want them to revert to a 5 out of 6 schedule. So if the board wants to do that, the board can revert the schedules to a common 5 out of 6 schedule.
I wasn't really recommending that we do that. I was just looking for clarification about who's actually driving the bus.
Yes, well, and here's the problem, is that while right now the staff votes and then that vote goes to the board for approval, if the board does not like that, you're absolutely right. They can revert back to a 5 out of 6. I've been living with master schedules for over 20 years. The hard part is when you look at the research, there's really no one schedule that stands out as being the primary driver of achievement. So it's high quality teaching, it's high quality interventions and opportunities for kids. So while I wish we had uniformity, I'm not sure that's the savior of the day. I'm not sure that's the driver that's going to get us to closing the achievement gap. And that would be my reason for really thinking it through organically with the individual staffs, with the leadership of each site, to try to come together to a common agreement on what are those core elements of a schedule that best meets the needs of kids. I really believe strongly our middle school programs need an extra period in the day, but that's a cost prohibitive response at this point. So okay. I'm looking for alternatives.
I would 100% echo Dr. Prater's comments there.
And I'm not research. That we do something unilaterally because I think it might be a Pyrrhic victory. We've been having this conversation about schedules for 20 years that I'm aware of, Chris. Huh? So Anyway, yeah. That's my.
Thank you. I have Ms. Frank and Ms. Roger.
Thank you, Ms. Sheffer. A quick question. Kristen, and I appreciate you getting back to me on my long list of questions. Looking at the high schools and Morro Bay and Slo High and the choices that they make because it's best for their staff and for their students. You know, I understand from just because it's what I'm familiar with, the semester system where a student can take, you know, if they're an AP student, they can take two, you know, an entire year that fills that need if they're a struggling learner. But I'm wondering, how does that work at the trimester system? Do your AP students, do they have three trimesters of English, and your struggling learners, do they have three trimesters within the same year? Mm-hmm. You know, I think it speaks
So the way that works is a full year of instruction is two trimesters. So it would be, you know, you have an A, a B, and a C, right? Let's say first trimester, second, and third, right? So a student either does, you know, first and second, or they do second and third, or they do first and third, right? Those are their choices for getting in a year's worth of instruction. But during one trimester of that year, they will have the subject off. So if it's, you know, English, they could have first and second, second and third, first and third. However, there are a couple of exceptions, and that's maybe what you're referring to. So math at Slo High is three trimesters for all math courses. Uh-huh. I believe it's all math courses. There might be just be algebra, algebra one, geometry, algebra two. It is not that way for calculus. However, the AP classes have a third trimester where they study for the exam. It's called the seminar. And mm-hmm. so it's spread out in that case also for three trimesters.
So for our struggling learners, could they be faced with a schedule where they have 6 months without English? I mean, yes. So
if they're not in an AP class and they're in, let's say, first trimester and second trimester, and then they have third trimester starting in March off, from March until August, they would not have the subject again until they pick it up again in August of the following year.
So keeping within the trimester desire of Slo High, is there a way to remedy that for our struggling learners?
Yes, there is, Evelyn, and that's what they're trying to do. And that their solution is to add continuity by adding a third trimester of that subject for struggling learners. But I will argue that when you do that, you're effectively tracking. Because not all kids will be in that three trimester track. Because a year is two trimesters. Right. So right now they've tried to do that for algebra one, geometry, and algebra two. Those are mandatory three trimester, or in other words, a year and a half of instruction.
Mm-hmm.
For English, that's not the case. So for English instruction, you just have two trimesters. They have discussed the idea of making it three trimesters, but I will say to you, if you do that, mm-hmm. you're going to create tracking within the schedule more so than it already is. And what I mean by that is some kids, struggling learners, will have a full three trimesters of English 9.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's not struggling will have two trimesters of English 9 and an elective or another opportunity in the schedule.
Mm-hmm.
But it's inherently imbalanced because what you're going to have are certain students, struggling learners, in the same classes
mm-hmm.
in English and in math. And it just doesn't pass, in my mind, the optics test.
But So that clearly the tracking and the equity issue is, I mean, it's a huge concern. So, but is it problematic that you do have students that are struggling, that do not, that are out of a core subject such as English for a duration of time, which could inadvertently increase tracking because they continually are behind because they don't have what they need? Just throwing that out there.
Yep. It's something that I know Slo High is working on.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Roger.
Oh, thank you. You know, Evelyn, that's something that's been discussed for a long time. It's a difficult issue. What I was going to say, sort of, I guess, as a follow-up to Mr. Millar, is that the responsibility for the schedules has always been retained as a management right. We've not, at least for the, you know, 18, 19 years I've been on the board, it's been important to us to hold on to that right. Yet we've never exercised it. So I think it is indicative of our collaborative interest and the interest of our administration to work with the school site staffs to accommodate the way that they feel they can best serve their students. But if ever the need really presented itself, and now that we have four different schedules, it is seeming that, it's getting difficult. It's getting difficult when you have four different groups' feelings about how best to approach the schedule. I don't think I articulated that well, but I hope you kind of got what I meant.
Yes.
Yes, we did.
Any other discussion at this time? This is an action item. So if anyone would like to make a motion to approve the secondary school schedules. Mr. Unger?
So moved.
Mr. Millar? Second. All right, here we go. Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Frey?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
And I vote yes as well. So that motion carries 7-0. All right. On to item 10.06, approval of annual declaration of need for fully qualified educators.
So this is me also. So the declaration of need comes to you every year. And it's our, we submit this to the California Teacher Credentialing Office, basically to say these are the positions and subject areas that we feel we may be short finding a credentialed teacher. And the reasons why we run short are kind of logical ones. We're in a good position compared to many other districts in that we don't have a lot of waivers and interns, and there's a tremendous teacher shortage, or there has been until this year, until probably next year. And so therefore we've been luckier than many districts in our ability to be able to staff without unqualified staff members. You'll see on there's emergency clads that we're requesting and that we think we will need. The reason for those is that we hire people from out of state. And when you come in with an out of state credential from any other state, then you often don't have a clad embedded into your credential. And so these are fully credentialed folks. They just happen to be from another state and they don't have the clad along with it. So they're given a California credential and told, hey, you have X amount of time to get the clad accomplished. But in the meantime, we have to put them on an emergency CLAD authorization. So that's why that one is in there. The next one in there is the emergency bilingual authorizations. And we find that we hire a lot of districts want to hire people that are bilingual, but because they're not teaching in Spanish, they're not required to hold a bilingual credential. So we have a lot of native speakers that apply for our positions. But if they are going to be at Baywood, Pacheco, or Laguna, or Los Osos, and they're going to be teaching in Spanish, so the instruction is actually in Spanish, they have to hold a BCLAD. So a lot of these folks have been teaching for a long time. It's just that they've even been maybe, using their Spanish within the context of the classroom, but they're not teaching in Spanish. So that's why we get a lot of applicants that are fully bilingual. It was their first language, native speakers, but they don't have a BCLAD. And so we have to get them an emergency BCLAD in order for them to be able to get the authorization. The next one on there is limited assignment permits, and these allow us to move a credentialed teacher into a new area and allow them a year to get the additional authorization. So they might be, very experienced teachers and have been teaching for a long time, but we have a bubble of population maybe that's going through, and we need more English sections than we have in the past. And somebody has a credential that's close to English, but it doesn't qualify them for exactly that particular subject. Sometimes it'll be between, biology and algebra, for example, and they will have a lot of math in their background, but they don't have a math authorization. And so therefore it gives us that additional time to be able to get them a limited assignment permit, allow them to have an additional year to get that authorization. That's really helpful, especially at the high school, where we might need an extra section of a subject that has really high class numbers. And then the emergency resource specialist is in case we hire someone with a older special ed credential for like one of our part-time positions, because those credentials don't include RSP. So somebody without the RSP authorization can do an added authorization during the time period of that emergency permit. And then internships, we don't have Cal Poly does not offer any internships. So you will see that question comes up every year, and Cal Poly doesn't offer internships. So those are a few things that you should know. So the declaration of need is for us to express to the state that we think we're going to be in need of these emergency documents, and we put them forward at this time of year. And then once we file this paperwork, and then once we need them, we are allowed to have up to that number that's listed. If we exceed the number that we have given there, then we have to file a new declaration of need, and it would have to come back to you.
All right, I need to go to the public for this item. Anyone? Cool. All right, coming back to the board, I have Mr. Buckman and Mr. Millar.
Thanks, Ellen. I had just two questions. Kristen. So we have two universities that we're working with on the internships. Is there a way to know how many, I guess a percent, or how many students we're actually hiring out of the internship program that we're using?
How many, you mean how many interns we're hiring?
No, actual interns that convert to teachers.
Well, so the internship program's typically 2 years, and so they are in teaching for us while they're getting their credential, and it's an intern credential. The reason why we would do that is if we're short, so there's a hierarchy of hiring, and the state says first you have to hire a fully qualified teacher if you can find one. And then if you can't find one, then you can move down to somebody who's in an internship program. And then lastly, you can move to somebody who is inexperienced. So we go through that hierarchy. So with the internship, we have a couple of interns in really hard to fill positions, and they will be working on getting their credential. And then at the end, we can choose to hire them at the end of their internship. Typically, it's 2 to 3 years, or they could choose to go get hired somewhere else. Did that answer your question?
It's close. Let me try again. When they've completed, when they have their credential, do we hire teachers right out of program, or have we hired teachers out of these two university programs?
For the internships?
Not for the internships, as real teachers when they've completed.
When they've completed their student teaching?
Yes.
Yes, we hire, so Cal Poly places a lot of students in our school. No, you're not thinking of Cal Poly?
Yeah, because I know we don't do. So we have people that are interning in our district, get an intern credential, then they complete, then they have a credential, then we can hire them. So do we end up with full-time non-internship teachers out of these two programs that we're interning?
We may have more than two. I'm not sure about that as far as intern programs. And yes, we do hire them actually when they're starting their internship. And then they stay hired on after they complete their internship.
Okay, thank you.
And then, almost all of them stay on unless they, just like a probation, they're on probation during the time they're doing their internship. And so if we feel they're doing a good job during that time, they typically are hired back.
Okay. And then the second thing is you mentioned that in lieu of or as a bonus sometimes we're hiring native speakers to teach maybe in two languages. How do we know that somebody's a native speaker without asking them?
Well, on the application that asks if they're fluent in Spanish, and then we ask them once they apply, we send them a link to a video and they have to answer some questions for us. And if it's a position where they're required to teach in Spanish, one of the questions they have to respond in Spanish. And then when we interview them, we also ask questions in Spanish. And if it weren't during the time of COVID, they would be teaching a lesson to students in Spanish.
Thank you so much.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Roger? Or Mr. Millard, I'm sorry.
Move the item.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Second? As a second? All right. And I ask that out of order. Is there any further discussion at this time? All right. Then we will do our roll call vote. Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Me? Yes.
Dr. Isabeth Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Ms. Frame?
Yes.
And I approve as well, so that item passes. So we will now move on, having pulled items 10.07 and 10.08, we will now move on to our action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like any item pulled. 11.01, approval of foreign exchange organizations. 11.02, acceptance of donations. 11.03, approval of purchase orders and Cal card purchases. 11.04, approval of furniture and equipment request. 11.05, approval of warrants and payroll. 11.06, approval of certificated and classified personnel items.
Can I pull, my phone rang, I apologize. Did you call for 11.07 yet?
That's just what I was going to do.
Thank you, I'm sorry.
Disposal of surplus.
Can I pull that, please?
You want 11.07 pulled?
Yeah, thanks. Okay.
Then I would like a motion, please, on items 11.01 through 11.06. Mr. Millar. I don't know where you went.
Hang on. I'll move items 11.01 through 11.06.
I'll second.
And Ms. Spring seconds. Here we go. Mr. Millar.
Yes.
Ms. Spring.
Yes.
Dr. Isabeth Rogers.
Yes.
Mrs. Rogers.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
Mr. Unger. Did I call you?
Yes.
And me. Yes. All right. Motion carried. I got everybody, right? I'm trying to mix it up here. All right. Motion carries unanimously. 11.07, Mr. Buckman.
Thanks, Ellen. I looked at this item and it made me think, when we have a piece of surplus property, we have to offer it to other agencies prior to putting it on the market. And I'm looking at this item and there's just a ton of baking stuff and food service and stuff. And so my question is, on surplus property, do we need to offer it to other agencies prior to us putting it up for surplus?
No, we don't. Okay. Something like this, that's like items like this, we do not. We have to, we put it out to surplus for everyone, right? It's not like a property. So in terms of like a school district property, those types of things, where you do have to offer it first to public groups or other schools or those types of things, right? Other government agencies. But in this case, these items, it basically just goes out to kind of an auction system.
Okay, so as we're looking at this, the food situation in the United States and here, and a lot of organizations that are trying to provide food, it dawns on me, maybe is there some way with particular items we can have a list to make sure, or do we have a list to make sure that other agencies besides someone that's aware of the agenda sees what's coming up? And it's just,
I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, I don't know. You know, a lot of this is pretty obsolete old stuff that I don't even know if another group would want or have to use, right? I mean, looking at the values, it's pretty low on most of these. So I don't know where we would see like who to tell that to or who to ask, right? You know, right. We'd be more than willing to send this out and put it out. We do put everything out to like a public auction bid. Use 777. So okay. It does go out. So if they're interested in buying auction types of things, they would be able to see it.
Okay. Sorry, I missed that. When you said public auction, I thought you meant just on our agenda. So I'd like to move approval, and thank you, Ryan. I'd like to move approval 11.07.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Roger. Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Millar? Yes. Ms. Frey?
Yes.
Dr. Elizabeth Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
And I will vote approval as well. So that carries. Thank you. Next is 12.02, advanced agenda. There is nothing. We will go to reports by board members. Mrs. Roger, then Mr. Unger.
Mrs. Sheffer, I had pulled the personnel item on the advanced agenda.
Could you explain that?
Could I explain it? When you went through and you got to the personnel item, I had said, pull, please. Perhaps you didn't hear me.
Certificated and classified personnel items?
Yes.
Oh, no, I did not hear you at all.
Okay, I may not have spoken up, but I wonder if I could address that item?
Well, we voted on it, but you can address it.
I'll pursue it independently. Thank you.
I'm so sorry.
That's all right.
Okay. Reports by board members.
Hey. It's okay. They wanted to pull this item that was my item. And
Okay, you're unmuted. Go while the strike while the iron is hot, Chris.
Okay, I just wanted to say that I went to the Morro Bay staff parade last week. And I just want to thank all the teachers and all the staff at Del Mar, not Morro Bay. Of course, it was in Morro Bay at Del Mar. Really great participation. But I also wanted to thank the city of Morro Bay for their support. They had the police volunteers who were monitoring the traffic for the parade, as well as the use of the city trolley to carry staff members, socially distanced, of course. And again, just kudos to the staff at Del Mar and kudos to the city of Morro Bay.
Anyone else? All right. Thank you, one and all. Apologies for technical difficulties. We will see everyone soon. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Alan, are you still there?